Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 386. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about coral atolls, volcanic islands, and a beach that will quite literally blow you away as we go to the Windward Islands of the Lesser Antilles in the Caribbean. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by BloggerBridge, bloggerbridge.com, which is my site, which will help companies connect with bloggers. We are a week closer to a beta, or if you're listening to this sometime in the future, we are a wildly successful website. Check it out, bloggerbridge.com, if you're a travel blogger or someone who's trying to connect with travel bloggers. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. A Lufthansa flight on its way from Stockholm to Frankfurt was diverted to Copenhagen because there was concern because there was a strong odor on board the plane. Turns out it was just the new carpet. Apparently, the new plane smell is not the one you're looking for. Christmas Islands Tourism Board ran into trouble with Facebook because they claimed the advertisement that they put up that was announcing some new baby birds on the island breached decency guidelines. It did not help that the birds they were advertising were the brown booby, and so their ad had said, some gorgeous shots here of some juvenile boobies. I know it makes me sound 12, but it just made me laugh. But here's a good idea. Etihad Airlines is introducing flying nannies. If you're on a long flight, a long-haul flight with Etihad, and you have small children, you can get a dedicated nanny service to take care of the kids. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Gary Arndt from everything-everywhere.com, who's come to talk to us about his recent trip to the Caribbean, especially to the Leeward Islands. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, for some of us, at least two of us, this whole interview is going to sound very familiar because we had a technical problem and we've done this one before. So my apologies first to Gary, and thank you for your patience in coming back and doing this again with me in the course of 2 weeks.
That's okay. It's just that when you count the number of times I've been in the show, I would like half credit for the previous attempt.
That seems completely reasonable. And Gary, as we say, has been on the show before. He has been on the show talking about, and I'm not sure I can do this in order, the Federated States of Micronesia, the Micro States of Europe, the UNESCO World Heritage Sites, the Canary Islands.
And the Gulf States.
And the Gulf States. There we go.
So this is my sixth time on the show.
Or six and a half, if we...
Six and a half. Once again, we're talking about little islands.
This does seem to be a theme with us. Now, you recently finished a tour of much of the Caribbean all in one trip, and that is not a typical trip.
No, I started in June 2013 in the Bahamas, and then worked my way from the U.S. Virgin Islands, British Virgin Islands, St. Martin, Anguilla, Saba, St. Eustatius, St. Barts, St. Kitts, Nevis, Anguilla, Antigua, Montserrat, Guadeloupe, Dominica, Martinique, St. Lucia, Barbados, St. Vincent, Grenada, and Trinidad.
And we're not going to try and do all of that in this episode, but we're going to try and do about half. We're going to do the Leeward Islands, and we'll save the Windward Islands for a later episode. And also, you started in the Virgin Islands, which we've done some of already on the Amateur Traveler, so we're going to kind of focus a little to the east of the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, just so your listeners know, that the Caribbean is a lot of different islands, and they're broken up into different groups.
Mm-hmm.
There are, roughly speaking, there are two main groups, and they are the Bahamas and the Antilles. The Bahamas consist of the nation of the Bahamas and the Turks and Caicos, and the Antilles is pretty much everything else. The Antilles are then split into two groups, the Greater Antilles, which are the big islands like Cuba, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Jamaica, and also the Cayman Islands are included in that, and Puerto Rico. And then the Lesser Antilles, which tend to be the smaller islands, which are pretty much all the ones I just listed. And then of the Lesser Antilles, those are split into two groups, which are the Leeward Islands and the Windward Islands. And the Leeward Islands are in the north, and the Windward Islands are in the south.
Well, and it seems like the only ones you didn't get to this time are the Greater Antilles and the Netherlands Antilles.
Technically speaking, the Netherlands Antilles no longer exists. They were dissolved in 2010. What you're probably referring to are the ABC Islands,
right,
of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao. I've been to those previously, and those are usually lumped together with the Windward Islands as well, although they're kind of off the archipelago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't visit them on this trip because I had been there previously.
Excellent. So before we get into the specifics, and I want to get it talk about a number of the different islands individually, but the overall trip, I think you learned a couple things. So most people are not going to be following you on this trip, and it's not as easy as you may have once thought.
No. Basically, all of the islands are within eyesight of another island, with the exception of Barbados and I think Trinidad. You can always see the next island you're going to, so they're very close. And they may be as close as 20 miles or sometimes even less. However, that doesn't mean that going between the islands is at all easy. For starters, inter-island flights are pretty much a monopoly of an airline called LIAT, which stands for Leeward Island Air Transport, but is also known for as Leave Island Anytime, Luggage in Another Terminal, and others. So I've probably heard like five different acronyms for it. But the ferry service between the islands doesn't always make sense. And a lot of time it's simply based on demand, not necessarily distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have things like St. Eustatius, which is quite close to St. Kitts, but there's no ferry traffic between it, even though St. Eustatius is closer to St. Kitts than St. Martin, but there's a ferry between St. Martin and St. Eustatius.
So, and you ran into, I think, all of the problems you're talking about. You ran into doing a really short flight and yet getting there without your luggage.
I did a 26-minute flight from Tortola in the British Virgin Islands to St. Martin, which my bag was lost. Turns out they never put it on the plane at all. I had flights delayed for many, many hours. What would end up being like a 30-minute flight, and you're delayed 6 hours. The ferries, for the most part, ran according to schedule. My trip there was in the low season, which is summer in North America. And so ferries often will not run as often as they do in the high season. So that was something to take into consideration as well.
But it sounds like, in general, that being there in the low season actually worked out very well for you.
It's not bad. People have the impression that it's oppressively hot. But quite frankly, it's not that much different than it is in the winter. There might be a bit more humidity, but I found looking at temperatures that it was actually cooler sometimes on the islands than it was in many large North American cities. It will seldom get oppressively hot. It will get very warm, but certainly not as bad as what you're going to see in places like Phoenix for most of the summer.
Sure, yeah. And then the other things you ran into were bureaucratic red tape, although I think you ran into more of those in the Windward Islands, as I recall. The worst.
Well, it's a problem everywhere simply mm-hmm. because, and this goes back to the history of the islands, that they were all colonized by either the French or the British for the most part. There were some Danish and Swedish involvement, but they eventually sold off to other European countries. And when they decolonized, they kind of fragmented into every island on its own, which is why you see so many different little countries. And to this day, you still see a fair number of small territories that are not really small enough to become independent countries, or not large enough to become independent countries.
Let's start doing the islands in order. You flew into
St. Thomas, which would have been my first stop, spent several days there. And eventually took the ferry to Rhodetown in the British Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm.
Won't spend a lot of time talking about the Virgin Islands, but suffice to say, I think the British Virgin Islands are much more high-end than the U.S. Virgin Islands. And a lot of people say that St. Thomas is the most developed, and they're right. But it's also the easiest, very accessible. The airport can accept planes from pretty much anywhere. So mm-hmm. it's a common entry point into the region.
Well, and it's most accessible too. I mean, it gets a lot of tourism. I think I've seen as many as 4 cruise ships in the harbor at the same time.
Yeah, I felt that the British Virgin Islands were much more laid back and just kind of nicer. But I should note, if you do travel by ferry from U.S. to British Virgin Islands, expect to get far more scrutiny at the ferry terminal than you would if you were flying in. And I was told that's because there's been drug smuggling between the islands, and so they give you extra attention when you arrive.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, and then from the Virgin Islands, you went
to St. Martin, which is, if not the hub, one of the major hubs for the region, along with Antigua. The island is split between the French and the Dutch side. So the French side is a part of France. The license plates are French license plates. They use the euro. It technically is France. Although that being said, I've been to many French territories around the world, and it's probably the least French territory I've been to, simply because of the influence from the Dutch side. A lot of people will speak English in their day-to-day business. The French side of the island is probably, like I said, I think a little nicer, maybe a little less touristy, a little less developed than the Dutch side. Dutch side has the majority of the population, even though it's a slightly smaller area, and it's more developed. You're going to see more large resorts on the Dutch side, also strip clubs, bars, things like that.
Okay. So a lot of the places we're talking about have beaches. We're going to talk about some of the islands really have none.
Right.
But what else is going to draw us? You mentioned the culture, but are there particular things that you would recommend that we do while we're in St. Martin's?
I think the unique thing about St. Martin is its airport. And the runway abuts right to a beach called Maho Beach. Mm-hmm. And so you can be on the beach and have planes flying right over your head. And if you do a search on just St. Martin Airport or something and watch some of the YouTube videos, you'll see some incredible videos of people being blown over by jet engines. And so I actually went and did that. The bars on the beach will have time schedules of when flights are taking off. Usually want to be there maybe 15 minutes or even 20 minutes before when they arrive. But they will come very, very low right over your head. And when they take off, especially the very large jets that are flying to Europe, they will blow an enormous amount of thrust right in your face and kick up a ton of sand. And it's something to experience. I think most people may have flown on a jet before, but you've never really experienced viscerally how powerful a jet engine is until you've stood behind one.
Now, despite the fact that we have done this whole show before, I'm still amused by the fact that you are recommending that we go sit on a beach and get blown up by jet engines, really.
There's a road that runs between the runway and the beach.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't want to stand on the road and grab the chain link fence, which people do, and you get blown over. You don't want to do that. But if you're just standing on the beach, it's basically just going to be a lot of wind, and it's going to kick up some sand, so you might want to cover your eyes. But yeah. It's actually become one of the largest attractions for people visiting from a cruise ship to do that. And I think a lot of it is because of the success and the notoriety it's gained on YouTube that people kind of want to experience it firsthand.
And you mentioned cruise ships. You have been on cruise ships before, but aren't the biggest fan of cruise ships. Not that you hate them, but...
No, it's not my thing. My biggest problem with cruise ships is always what you do in port. You simply don't have enough time.
Mm-hmm. But you came back with a little different experience from the Caribbean and cruise ships.
Well, these are very small islands. And many of these islands, you can actually go around the entire island in approximately an hour, which means that you have plenty of time to stop, see some sights, go to a museum, have some lunch, take some pictures, and get a reasonably thorough experience on many of these islands because they're so small. And so you have 8 hours or 10 hours or something like that. You can get in a good day on many of these islands and have an experience that you're not going to have if you're trying to see Rome in 8 hours.
Right. Sure. Well, the other thing too is you don't have that far to go.
So example, if a cruise ship stops in St. Martin, they stop in Phillipsburg and you're right downtown immediately. Mm-hmm. You don't take a bus anywhere. You could just walk right off the ship and spend an enjoyable day in Phillipsburg. Lots of shopping, lots of restaurants, and you'll never have to even get in a car.
And when you say lots of shopping, I think of the shops that tend to cater to cruise ships tend to be more high-end shopping.
Yeah, lots of jewelry stores, mm-hmm. things like that. Kind of the typical stuff you see everywhere that cruise ships stop.
Okay. Anything else about St. Martin's before we head out?
I just think that dichotomy between the French and the Dutch side is interesting. There are many things that are similar, but many things that are different. And I think if you visit St. Martin, whatever side you're going to, make sure to visit the other side as well, just to see the differences between the two sides.
Okay. And whither do we go from here?
So the next island I visited would be the island of Anguilla, which is very close to St. Martin. The ferry from St. Martin to Anguilla is about 15 to 20 minutes. It's a very short ferry ride. There is a ferry terminal for Anguilla about 5 minutes from the airport, so it's a very short trip. If you buy a ferry ticket, they will usually include the transportation from the airport to the ferry terminal as part of the ticket. They have an immigration facility at the ferry terminal for leaving St. Martin, so it's a very short trip. And what's unique about Anguilla is that it is not a volcanic island, whereas most of the islands in the Caribbean are. It is a raised coral reef, which has two implications. One is that there are no high points on the island. The entire island is incredibly flat. And the second thing is you have a lot of white sand beaches. And that's really its highlight. They had by far, I think, the best beaches I've seen anywhere in the Caribbean. And they had many of them. And they're very proud of their beaches. Anguilla is a British territory still. Interesting bit of history is there was a thing called the Anguilla Revolution, fought in 1968. And by fought, I'm using that word very loosely. Prior to independence, the British created a territory called St. Kitts, Nevis, and Anguilla. The problem is Anguilla didn't really want to be a part of it. They felt that the people from St. Kitts were keeping all the money. So one day they rounded up all the police officers who were all from St. Kitts and put them on airplanes and said goodbye. They declared their independence, which lasted a couple days before the British came back and recolonized them. And that's where they are today.
Now, my impression from when we talked before was that Anguilla also doesn't get as much tourism despite having these beautiful beaches.
Not really. They said that they get about 28,000 visitors a year, which is higher than the population of the island, but much less than many of the neighboring islands. And part of this is because you don't see as many flights coming to Anguilla. Usually, if you fly to Anguilla, you have to fly into St. Martin and then take the boat ride. And even though it's a very short boat trip and it's very fast and very easy, that extra step is what hurts tourism to a lot of these smaller islands because it isn't just a direct flight. And a lot of people prefer the direct flight. You get off, go to your resort, and you're done.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it any cheaper because there is less tourism?
Not really. Anguilla is considered to be the second most expensive island in the group after St. Barts. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's quite as, it's not nearly as bad as St. Barts. And they have eschewed any chain hotels on Anguilla. So there's no Radissons or Marriotts or Hyatts or things like that. They're all rather independent. And they do have several very upscale hotels, but they also have a fair number of smaller hotels as well. The cost of the room I had, I believe it was called the Frangipani Hotel, was approximately $100 a night, and it was on a white sand beach in the low season.
Which does not sound that expensive to me.
No, I'm sure it would be more than that during the high season.
Oh, but, sure, right. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And actually, while we're talking about cost, food, though, is one thing you found to be fairly expensive.
Yeah, everywhere in the Caribbean, I found food to be rather pricey, especially in a place like Anguilla. They basically grow nothing. Mm-hmm. A very dry island, horrible agriculture. They rely very heavily on tourism, which means that pretty much all their food is imported. So you're going to, I call it an island tax, which is not a literal tax. It's just the extra cost for shipping everything in.
Well, I'm going to guess, too, that they have to desalinate a lot of their water.
For some of the resorts, I'm sure they do that. But for most homes you'll see in the Caribbean, they will have rainwater.
Oh, like Bermuda then. Okay.
Ceiba, your house is actually built on a cistern.
Okay.
You build a cistern first, build the house over it, and then that just fills up from rainwater.
Now, do they, I know in Bermuda where they have the similar sort of thing, it's very, very dry. They have the white painted roofs, which look very pretty in the pictures, but what they're really for is capturing rainwater.
You'll see that in most places. You'll have either a cistern outside the house or system to capture as much of that as possible. And for the most part, it works. Occasionally, you'll have a drought where they don't get a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. That's usually what they do.
Okay. Anything else about Anguilla?
Like I said, great beaches. And if you're a beach person and you don't want the huge crowds, I think Anguilla is a great option. Again, has a reputation of being more expensive than St. Martin, but I didn't find it to be crazy, outrageous expensive like I found in places like St. Barts or Tahiti.
Right. And did you have a favorite beach on Anguilla?
There was one place we stopped at that had been voted one of the best beaches by, I think it was Condé Nast magazine. Mm-hmm. Shoal Bay was where I was staying. Mm-hmm. And the other beach was Savannah Bay, I think.
Okay.
They're all white sand, very fine grain, and very broad, not just a very narrow beach. So you got a lot of sand distance from the start of the sand to the water.
Excellent. And not a lot of low-flying airplanes either.
No.
And where do we go next?
My next stop was the island of Saba, which mm-hmm. I'm guessing most people have heard of Anguilla. They've heard of St. Martin. They've heard of St. Barts. Most of them probably haven't heard of Saba, which is too bad because I think in many respects it's the most fascinating island in the Caribbean. It is a Dutch island, not a Dutch territory. It is a part of the Netherlands. With the dissolution of the Netherlands Antilles in 2010, Saba, St. Eustatius, and Bonaire are municipalities of the Netherlands. So if you look at a map of the Netherlands, it will have those three small islands as part of the Netherlands, as the same way that Hawaii is part of the United States. And mm-hmm. so the point in the Netherlands, this is a trivia question, is on the island of Saba, not in Europe.
And you climbed to the highest point in the Netherlands, I believe.
I did. It's called Mount Scenery. The naming situation of things on Saba is really unique. There's one road that goes through the island. It was built, I think, from the 60s to the 80s. No one thought it could be done because it's so mountainous, called The Road. The capital is located in the bottom of a volcanic caldera. It is called The Bottom. The village on the west side of the island, the windward side of the island, is called Windward Side. So it's all pretty simple naming. But the key to Saba is that there's under 2,000 people that live on the island, and it's very mountainous, and it seemed like all of our transportations, wherever we were going, was up and down. It's all vertical because everything, the airport is on one end of the island, the port is on the total other side of the island. Just getting everywhere involves curving roads, a lot of hairpin turns, and it's very remarkable that people were able to live there.
And not a lot of people, as you were pointing out.
The airport has the distinction of having the world's shortest commercial runway. And the only flights there are from St. Martin. It's a 12-minute flight, and the pilots have to be specially trained in order to land because it's so short.
And when you're going to Saba, you're going to see the scenery mostly because no beaches.
There is one sort of tiny rocky beach near the airport. That's about it. Certainly nothing to write home about. Yeah, you go there because beautiful landscape. If you like hiking, fantastic place to hike. Lots of trails that go up the mountains and around the mountains. And also some interesting scuba diving as well. I did one dive there. I actually got to see some volcanic sand at the bottom of the sea that was quite hot when you touched it.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
There's active volcanism going on in the region. And you could tell it when you did a dive.
You are a diver, as you point out. Did you do a lot of diving in the various islands?
Not as much as I would have liked. I only really dove in Saba, and then I did a dive earlier in the trip in the Bahamas, which isn't really part of the discussion for this. I'd love to go back to some of these places and do more diving.
Okay. Anything else about Saba?
If you're going to be in St. Martin, I highly recommend a visit to Saba. It's a short flight, not necessarily a cheap flight. There's also a ferry that goes to Saba. It's about a 90-minute ferry ride. Even if you're there for the day or you just want to spend one night there, it's just a really interesting place. The first language of the people there is English, although pretty much everyone speaks Dutch. Very different accent that they had. It was almost like a pseudo-Bostonian accent with a bit of an English accent thrown in. Very unique. They use U.S. dollars, and so even though it's part of the Netherlands, it's very different from, has a very different feel, not very Dutch at all.
I almost got the impression that a smaller version of the trip that you did would be just do three of the islands we talked about so far, do St. Martin, do Anguilla for the beaches, and do Saba.
Well, yeah, after St. Martin, there are four islands which are easily connected either by ferry or by air to St. Martin. Mm-hmm. Those we've discussed, Anguilla and Saba, the other two being St. Eustatius and St. Barts. So you could visit all those islands easily from St. Martin, and that would be a very doable trip. Regular ferry service, very short flights.
And that sounds like that would be a 2-week trip or something like that minimum, if you're going to throw in all that.
Yeah, you could probably do it in maybe less than that, 10 days. Like I said, some of these islands are big. St. Bart's, depending on your budget, probably don't want to, but certainly worth a day trip.
Well, let's talk about St. Bart's. We've referred to it a couple different times. It is the most expensive island in the Caribbean. It has that reputation.
Well, technically, in the whole Caribbean, I believe the island of Mustique in the Grenadines is actually more expensive because everything is private villas priced at like $10,000 a night.
Okay.
For the average wealthy person. That's for the billionaire wealthy person. This is just for the regular millionaire class type. St. Bart's would definitely be the most expensive island, certainly in the Leeward Islands.
And when we say expensive, can we put some numbers on that?
I did not stay overnight. I only did a day trip because I could not find a place for under $350 a night, and this was during the low season.
And in the high season, I think you said we're talking more like $1,000 a night.
Certainly during like the Christmas, New Year week, that time, yeah, you're probably going to be paying something around that.
So why would someone go to St. Bart's?
To say that they went to St. Bart's.
And to see all the other people who go to St. Bart's, I think, is the other answer.
I think it's like going to Bora Bora or Saint-Tropez or any other high-end destination. These places have developed a reputation as being high-end, and it's sort of a self-fulfilling thing. They attract high-end people, high-end hotels, and it just kind of feeds off itself.
And did you have any celebrity spotting experiences in St. Bart's?
Did not. And in fact, this bit of advice I can give people, if you do want to go to a day trip to St. Bart's, which is a good idea, don't do it on a Sunday because everything was closed. The capital, Gustavia, interesting place. I was able to spend several hours walking around, went to a cafe, but for the most part, yeah, you'd be better off going on a weekday, I think.
Okay. And then we had one more island in that cluster.
St. Eustatius, which along with Saba is part of the Netherlands. They're often grouped together. However, the islands couldn't be more different. Saba, the population tends to be more European descent. St. Eustatius, almost all Afro-Caribbean. St. Eustatius, there are two peaks on either side of the island, but they're not that big. So a very broad valley in the middle where pretty much everyone lives. Very historic island. So you can see in Fort Orange, which still is standing, it used to be the most important port in the Caribbean. St. Eustatius was called the Golden Rock. It was so important. It has changed hands 22 times between various European powers. The last one to have it were the Dutch, which is why it's a Dutch island today. And on the shore, you can still see all the warehouses made of stone and everything else. There used to be a seawall that the Dutch built to keep the sea out. So they had a little bit more land because the Dutch are really good at that. And to this day, its primary industry, there's an oil storage facility. So the big tankers will come, dump off oil here. They hold it in an area and then smaller ships take it to other islands.
And you mentioned historic. There's a significance for St. Eustatius relative to those of us from the U.S.
Yes. In November of 1776, the Dutch governor of St. Eustatius fired a cannon salute at the USS Andrew Doria, marking the very first time another country recognized an independent United States. And they were one of the primary sources of weapons for the rebel forces fighting the British at the time. And it so angered the British, they invaded the island and took it over.
And you happen to be there on 4th of July.
Yeah. The airport in St. Eustatius is named after Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who visited in, I want to say, 1936. Might be a few years. He dedicated a plaque at Fort Ornstad, which acknowledged the first salute. And there's a couple other plaques given by, I think, a Veteran of Foreign Wars organization and a Daughters of the American Revolution group that acknowledge it as well. So,
excellent.
St. Eustatius does not get a lot of tourism, and there's only about two hotels on the entire island. And like Saba, you do not have much in the way of beaches.
We talked about St. Bart's being, if you really are somebody who wants to drop a load of money, go to St. Bart's. Is there an opposite if you're a backpacker and you want to go to the Caribbean? Is there a place you can go or should go in these islands?
Not really. The only hostel I saw was on the island of Guadeloupe, which is a French territory. And so they had dorm beds and things like that. And that is the only place I found in the entire Leeward Islands that had something like that. You can certainly stay a bit cheaper in some of the hotels. Like St. Eustatius, I would not say as high-end at all. It was a very nice place to visit, but it's not backpacker cheap. I don't think islands would be considered that cheap.
And you mentioned being a historic place. Anything interesting particularly to see besides, you mentioned the fort, Fort Ornstadt?
Yeah, that's pretty much the biggest thing.
Okay.
A representative from the tourism board that gave me a tour of the island, and I think the whole thing was like a half hour. I mean, we went to one side, we drove to the end of the road, and then we took the other side to another end of the road, and that was it. There wasn't much else to see. The roads didn't really go anywhere else. There is a volcanic cone on the island, and you can climb that. It's called Mount Quill, Q-U-I-L-L, but I didn't do that during my stay.
Okay.
But evidently, you can climb right down into the cone, which is what they told me is very, very green and very lush.
Well, and you mentioned that this island is very green, and we talked about the island of Anguilla being very dry. So basically, the taller islands are greener, or at least have a windward side that is greener.
You catch a lot of the clouds. So when I hiked up to the top of Mount Scenery on Ceiba, the last third of the climb was all in clouds, basically, which actually meant that walking around is quite slippery, and it was much more difficult to get down the mountain than it was to get up. I think I slipped about six times on the way down.
Well, I remember being surprised when I was in the Virgin Islands, because I'm used to going to the islands like in Hawaii, where everything is, or at least part of the island is, tends to be fairly lush, and all the islands have a fair amount of height. There's mountains on a lot of the different islands, and the Virgin Islands were very, very dry in comparison. They were not my picture of a tropical island, I guess, but...
Yeah, when you get to some of the islands like Aruba, that's very dry.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly cactuses, in fact.
Where do we go next?
From here, we fly to the island of St. Kitts. St. Kitts and Nevis is the newest and smallest independent country in the Western Hemisphere. Despite being small, I think the total population of the country is about 55,000. It is a federation. So each island, St. Kitts and Nevis, kind of run their own show. A couple years ago, there was actually an independence referendum on Nevis, which has a population of, I think, 12 to 15,000, somewhere around there. And they needed a two-thirds majority to secede, and they were only like less than 100 votes away from doing it. So we could have had even a smaller country in our backyard had that gone through.
And what is St. Kitts? Well, let's start with St. Kitts. What is St. Kitts like?
St. Kitts is called the Mother Colony. It is the location of both the first French and English colonies in the Caribbean. So they both started on St. Kitts and also had the reputation. You can go there and see Brimstone Fortress, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the only one in the Leeward Islands. And it is was called the Gibraltar of the Caribbean. So it's still there today, still standing, kind of abandoned in the early 19th century. But since independence, they fixed it up. And now it's probably the single largest attraction on the island.
And what drew both the French and the English to the island?
I don't know.
Okay. I could get the fact that the Cuba and Espanol and Puerto Rico were settled by the Spanish because they got there first. But that left some of the smaller islands, but I wasn't sure if there was a particularly obvious reason why St. Kitts would be colonized next.
If you look at it on a map, it's shaped like a guitar. And so the area around the neck of the guitar would probably be the location for the best port, but it's all mountainous and you can't really get there. A place like Antigua, I thought, makes much more sense for naval vessels because it has such an irregular coastline and there are plenty of very good harbors that are available. In fact, that's where Lord Nelson harbored many of his ships in Antigua. But with St. Kitts, I would say it's probably the least developed island that I visited because they're not a territory of anyone anymore. They're independent. They have a fair amount of tourism. They have a unique policy that allows people to buy citizenship if you want. So I think for $120,000, you can get a St. Kitts passport.
Really?
You can just flat out buy citizenship. And I think if you make a $400,000 investment, so if you buy property, you can get citizenship as well. So I saw a couple of signs kind of at the beginning of the neck of the guitar part of the island is where you see a lot of the higher-end developments, the expats, things like that, some of the nicer hotels. And you'll see signs that say this investment in this condo qualifies for citizenship, things like that.
And I assume people do that in part for tax shelter reasons or things like that.
Just having a second passport. I think that if you are a citizen of St. Kitts, you can pretty much travel to most other Commonwealth countries without a visa. So it's not a bad deal. I don't know how many people have taken advantage of it, but yeah, it's a unique offer. And I think Dominica as well in the Windward Islands offers a very similar thing.
Interesting.
And I should also note the island of Nevis, which is the sister island. That's a 45-minute ferry ride. They leave several times a day. Several high-end hotels on Nevis. So there's a Four Seasons. I believe that Travel and Leisure magazine recently came out with their top 50 hotels in the world, and two of them were on Nevis, to give you an idea. Alexander Hamilton is a native of Nevis. He's in Division, not a Catition, which are the names of the people on the respective islands. And the Alexander Hamilton House is still available and not far from the port in Charlestown, which is the capital of Nevis.
Excellent. And what else is there to see besides the Alexander Hamilton House in Nevis?
There are some more beaches on Nevis than you're going to see on some of the other islands I previously mentioned. For a lot of these, it's not that there's necessarily unique stuff. It's a place to come and get away from it, from things. Nevis, again, does not get a ton of tourism. A lot of people don't know where it is or they've never heard of it, which I think is why you have several high-end hotels that are now opening there. The beaches are sufficient, and it's not crazy difficult to get to. If you have like a private jet or something, it could land on Nevis. And so it wouldn't surprise me if you see even more development in the future.
Actually, I think what you said there was fairly important. So when we talk about this region, this isn't necessarily the region for people who want to do something every hour of every day.
Things are pretty laid back. I think any island you go to, you always hear about island time and, and people taking life easy. And on these islands, yeah, there's not a lot of area. There's not a lot of space. The things which are of historical significance may not be that big of a deal in the big scheme of things. It could be a farm or a quarry or something like that, or just an old church. And you could probably see a lot of the historical things on a day tour of an island. And that may take no more than maybe 4 or 5 hours.
Okay. And then we've got at least one more island.
Well, two, maybe three, depending on how you define it. So from St. Kitts, I flew to the island of Antigua. Antigua population, I think it's about 80,000, so a little bit bigger. And very interesting island. It's Antigua and Barbuda is the name of the country, an independent country. And the island of Antigua has, it's a very irregular shaped coastline, lots of inlets, lots of harbors and bays. Was used as the primary British naval base for quite a while. Some excellent cricketers have come out of Antigua. Viv Richards, who I kind of found because I asked who Viv Richards was at a restaurant because they had a poster of him on the wall, from Antigua, considered one of the all-time great cricketers. And the airport there is slightly larger, so it can take direct flights from Europe and from the United States. And so it tends to get a bit more tourism than what you have on some of the other smaller islands that I've mentioned. And while it is mountainous, it is not nearly as mountainous as some of the other islands. There's a very broad plain, which means that it can support a higher population, which it does.
Now, you mentioned you learned about Viv Richards. My impression from that story was that they were stunned that you didn't already know who he was.
Yeah, I mean, he's like Babe Ruth for the West Indies. And for those of you who aren't familiar with cricket, the national game, this country versus that country, is, I'd say, the oldest and the probably the biggest thing in cricket. And most of the Caribbean cricket countries play under one team. So it's the West Indies, and that would include primarily Jamaica, Trinidad, Guyana, Barbados, and then many of the smaller islands such as Antigua, St. Kitts, Nevis, etc. I think Nevis said they had one player on the team, Antigua had several, St. Kitts had none, but it changes all the time as new players come up. And the sister island, Barbuda, I really wanted to go to Barbuda, but I wasn't able to do it on this trip. But 95% of the population in Antigua and Barbuda live in Antigua. Barbuda has only, I think, 5,000 people. There's a two-hour ferry that does go from Antigua to Barbuda that leaves daily, once there, once back. And Barbuda is not volcanic. It is a raised coral reef similar to Anguilla. And so you'll see a lot more beaches, even though it does not get nearly as much tourism as Antigua does.
Okay. And then that leaves Montserrat.
Yes. So Montserrat is a British territory, and it is probably best known for the volcanic eruption which took place in the late 90s. And the capital of Montserrat, at the time of the eruption, Montserrat had a population of approximately 12,000 people. The capital of Plymouth was basically wiped out. by a pyroclastic flow, which came off the volcano, buried the city. And today, roughly, I'd say more than half the island is out of bounds for humans. You're not allowed to visit. There are no roads anymore. And about two-thirds of the population ended up leaving the island. So some of them went to neighboring islands such as St. Kitts and Antigua, and others just went to the UK.
And we say not allowed to visit, because they're deemed unsafe.
Correct. Well, actually, I don't even know if you they may have some dirt roads or things that are available through off-roading, but there are no more paved roads available to get to these places.
Mm-hmm.
They've all been buried.
And you didn't do, but you can do a helicopter tour of Plymouth.
Yeah, so there are helicopter tours from Antigua which are available, and you can do that in a day trip. So you leave from Antigua, it flies to Montserrat, you fly over the ruins of Plymouth. I think they land, have lunch or something, and then fly back. There are boat tours that are available that go off the coast of Plymouth, but you cannot actually go to Plymouth itself. You can go to the Montserrat Volcanic Observatory, which is probably the biggest attraction on the island, and it's a great viewing point for the volcano itself. As late as May of 2013, there was lava still coming out of the volcano, so it's still quite active, and they're pretty sure that they're going to see more of the same, still some rather violent eruptions, which is why they've cordoned off so much of the island. And in the previous eruptions, several people died because they simply ignored instructions and wanted to stay in their home.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to what happened in the United States with Mount St. Helens.
Right. Now, last time you were on, when we did this before, I asked you who the most interesting person you met in your trip was, and you mentioned someone from Montserrat.
Yeah, my cab driver. So I get off the ferry. I took a ferry from Anguilla, arrived late at night, and the hotel, and I should say there are no hotels that I found that were actually on any of the booking engines like Expedia or Hotels.com. I actually had to go online, find the name of a hotel, send them an email, get confirmation that way. And they said, oh yeah, Moose will pick you up. So I'm very waiting for this Moose to pick me up. And eventually I'm just waiting and someone said, you have a ride? I said, well, yeah, this guy named Moose was supposed to pick me up. And I go, oh, Moose, he's over there. And he was just with a bunch of people drinking. And Moose was pretty much my guide for the 3 days I was on Montserrat. He took me to the hotel, drove me around, showed me all the sights. He lived in Plymouth. His home was destroyed. Told me his children now live in London. They go to school. But he intends to stay on Montserrat, doesn't want to leave. And he got the nickname Moose because he used to be a bodybuilder and was on the cover of bodybuilding magazines, I guess.
Excellent.
The airport, Montserrat, is also one of these crazy Leeward Island airports that is somehow chiseled into the stone. And so it's a very, very short runway. The only flights there are from Antigua. So that's the only way you're going to be able to fly to Montserrat.
One warning you would give about going to the Leeward Islands.
It isn't cheap. And the transportation can sometimes be rather difficult. So I know one question I constantly get is that people envision traveling these islands by boat. In the islands we've talked about on this show, it is possible. But so in that group around St. Martin, it's very easy. However, getting to St. Kitts is very difficult. The only way I found to do it is that there's a once a week ferry that goes from Nevis to Montserrat. And then there are regular ferries from Antigua to Montserrat. So you could sort of, if you used that ferry, you could divide the Leeward Islands into two groups, the St. Martin group and then the St. Kitts Antigua Montserrat group. So you could travel by boat in those two places, but getting between St. Eustatius and St. Kitts, you'd need a yacht or something like that.
Well, and I know that in the nearby Virgin Islands that there is a rental yacht thing is fairly easy to do. There are a number of companies that will do that there, and it's fairly common. Is that common in this area as well?
I did see people that did it. I met one guy who was a CEO of a travel company I met up with, and his family was renting a charter yacht and basically spending a year sailing through the Caribbean. So it certainly can be done. Knowing absolutely nothing about captaining a ship, I would never think of me. The distances between the islands are quite short.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be less than a day probably, maybe sometimes much, much less than a day to go between the islands. So especially if it was motorized or something and the weather was good, you could just go from harbor to harbor to harbor and do it that way.
Okay.
Well, one other thing I should mention is that the island of Guadeloupe is sometimes listed as one of the Leeward Islands and sometimes it's listed as a Windward Island. Guadeloupe is the largest island in this entire chain. It's very different from everything else. It's a French island. I was in Guadeloupe for 3 days, but quite frankly, I didn't get to explore a lot of the island. I pretty much just vegged out and rested.
You are a photographer, an increasingly wonderful photographer, I would have to say, especially when I consider how your photography has changed over the number of years you've been coming back on the Amateur Traveler. You're standing in the prettiest spot in the Leeward Islands. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I took some really nice photos on Saba, up on Mount Scenery. In fact, as we're recording this, I put up a wallpaper on my website every month. This month's wallpaper is from the island of Saba.
Oh, excellent.
Just a picture of a wooden bench that was sitting in the rainforest that I took a picture of, and I enjoyed it. So you're going to get those sort of views on Saba. The beaches in Anguilla, those always, people love the beach photos. I have several photos of the white sand beach and the kind of the palm-thatched parasol that people can sit under, those kind of things. I think those are some of the really stereotypical views you're going to get. But basically, most of the islands are volcanic islands with a lot of green. And if you were to take an aerial view, you're going to get something like that on pretty much every island.
And since we're talking about Gary's photography, I will give a plug here that you are now doing photography tours. So if people wanted to learn how to take pictures more like the wonderful pictures they see on your site, where is your next one?
We haven't announced it yet, but I hope to announce it within the next month. Last year, we went to Italy. The year before, we did one in the U.S. Southwest. And we think we have a location picked out. We haven't finalized it yet, but we're going to be announcing it soon.
Excellent. And we there being you and G Adventures.
G Adventures is my sponsor, and they sort of handle the logistics. I don't want to be in the tour business, and they do a pretty good job of it.
Excellent. What did you find were the best resources for planning a trip to this area besides Amy, who does a lot of your travel coordination?
General Google searches, because for some of the islands, it's very trivial. Finding things on Antigua and St. Martin was not hard at all. Even Anguilla, places like that. Places like Saba, St. Eustatius, or Montserrat was rather difficult because they don't have normal hotels. They're not tied into the booking system. Mm-hmm. So you actually have to do some research. And sometimes you'll find people just giving comments on TripAdvisor, not necessarily reviews of hotels, but just what to do on the island or things to see and who to talk to.
Three more questions. What else should we tell people before I get to my last three questions?
That in and of itself would be a question.
Oh, rats.
If you're going to visit the region, I highly recommend not just visiting one island, whatever that might be. If you're going to visit St. Martin, take the time to visit Anguilla or Saba or St. Eustatius, because these are wonderful little islands that get very few visitors, and they have a very different feel from what you're going to get in the tourist areas of, say, St. Martin.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in the Leeward Islands of the Lesser Antilles.
Many of the islands, not on St. Martin, they print their own license plates. And by print their own license plate, I mean anybody can print their own license plate. So license plates of different fonts, different colors. We're accustomed to a standardized plate, right, for a U.S. state or a country.
Right.
Same. No, they don't bother to print their own license plates because there aren't that many cars. So you just go to a place and they print like a vinyl license plate, however what style you want, and they put it on their car. And I'd never seen that before anywhere in the world.
Huh.
But many islands do that.
I've never heard of that either. Interesting.
Yeah.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in the Lesser Antilles, in the Leeward Islands, when what?
You find yourself filling out several customs forms every time you go between islands, every little island. Even if you're going from Dutch St. Martin to Dutch Saba, you got to fill out a customs form. You got to get your passport checked every single time. And that's the biggest downside, I think, to traveling in the region.
Okay. And if you had to summarize the region in three words?
Small, mountainous, really small.
Gary, we've mentioned everything-everywhere.com a couple times already. Where else can people find you on the internet?
Oh, I'm all over the internet. They can find me on Twitter at Everywhere Trip. I'm on Facebook. Search for Everything Everywhere. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Google+.
And don't you also do an award-winning travel show on the internet?
I do, but I'm really just carried by my co-hosts.
for those of you who don't know, Gary and I are, 200 episodes into This Week in Travel, which is more of a travel news and interview show, and so not a destination show, a little different than Amateur Traveler. A fine little show, though. Excellent. Well, Gary, thanks so much for coming back on, and we'll have Gary on soon to talk about the Windward Islands as well.
Thanks for having me.
I heard this week from Jackie, who said, I just listened to episode 377 on South Australia, my home state, and it was great. I have visited all the places mentioned in the episode, but never really thought they were remarkable, as they are all normal sights here. I guess visiting them when you were young on a family trip during your school holidays will do that. But now as an adult, I can appreciate all the places around me and how lucky I am to live here. I suppose it takes the vision of an outsider to sometimes make you realize what you have. Thanks for such a great episode as usual. Well, Jackie, I'm glad you enjoy it. I always get a little nervous when somebody starts the sentence with, you wrote about where I live, because from there it can go one of two directions. And I heard from Wayne, who said, hi, Chris, thanks for the name check the other week. I booked a San Diego dinner cruise with Viator, and you mentioned it on the show. Just to say, the cruise was excellent, as was San Diego, which I know you are a fan of. Not long back in the UK, after 20 days in the US, taking in Newport Beach, have relatives there, San Diego, Palm Springs, Joshua Tree National Park, Roy's Cafe at Amboy, and a slice of Route 66, Las Vegas, Yosemite, San Francisco, and the Bay Area. Wife had a conference to attend at Berkeley. Santa Cruz and Monterey Pacific Grove, where the other half of her conference was. Had an excellent time and looking forward to coming back to the U.S. in November to visit Florida's Gulf Coast and the Keys. We'll have to have another look on Viator to see what's happening in that vicinity. Keep up the good work. Many thanks, Wayne. We haven't advertised Viator on this show, but you can still use the link that Wayne used, which was amateurtraveler.com/tours. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can join the Facebook community, as Jackie did, and leave your comment at facebook.com/amateurtraveler, or you can follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.